there is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pits of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination in an area which we call Elder Dragon Journey.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're live at the Elder Dragon Journal podcast. This is your host, Igor, and as always, it's me, my co-host, Niksha. Say hi, Niksha.
Hi.
Niksha, what up?
Nothing.
Well, since this full spoiler for Ravnica is out, we have decided to bring somebody really special to go through the whole set with us. Somebody special. Who are you?
Hey, guys. This is Jesse. You may know me from Team Turn 3. We're currently on a bit of a hiatus, but, you know, I can't help but get the itch to create content sometimes, so here I am.
There we go. Last time we heard you, you were also on a hiatus, right?
Yeah, so not much has changed in that regard, just because, like, I was really busy at the time with school, and now I'm really busy at the current time teaching as well as doing school at the same time. So it's, you know, the workload just gets ever greater. And the amount of free time just gets ever smaller.
I can feel it with that. I just changed jobs like a month ago, and I'm still in that transitional period. Plus, we're going to move out of this apartment soon. So.
Oh, well, congratulations on the move.
Oh, thank you. Want to do Commander of the Week before we head to the meat of the podcast?
Absolutely, why not?
So, Niksha, want to start?
Well, let's let our special person start. All right.
This is your second time, can't special anymore.
I think last time I handed it to Tim Necrom, who are sort of like somewhat underrepresented as far as like partner commanders go, at least in the competitive scene. Today, and actually this sort of harkens back to the last time I was on the show, I have to give it to my girl Najeela, who I was like the card I was most excited for from Battlebond.
Yeah, yeah.
And I called it back then that she would actually be relevant for competitive, and it turns out I was right. I recently put out a primer for Najeela, and the deck is actually tearing it up in the competitive scene. I mean, not quite as represented as Thrasios and Timna, and, you know, obviously, like, Protean Hulk is still the menace, but it's, you know, quite surprising to see just this five-color good stuff deck, you know, somehow making waves within the community, and, you know, shout-out to the Najeela Discord and everybody who has been involved with making that deck actually, like, a competitive force.
Yeah, I remember actually talking about her with you after the podcast, a couple of weeks after.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad it all turned out as well as it did.
Yeah, no, and that deck's a lot of fun. It's exactly the type of deck I like to play because you're basically just jamming only good cards, interaction, you know, ramp, all the good stuff in five colors, and then you have like a bunch of one card win conditions with your commander. So like, it's a good stuff deck, and I just like, that's what I love to play. I love to play these mid-rangey like decks that are just all good cards, and you're just crushing your opponent with better cards than they're playing.
There we go.
So Niksha,
Yeah, Niksha, what about you?
Well, I haven't really played Commander. I did play some Modern, but other than that, no. So I don't know. I guess Aether Vial is my Commander of the Week because I was doing some death and collecting some taxes.
Niksha is a man of culture, confirmed.
Unfortunately, I did not get to kill as many lands in combination with Cat G's, but it doesn't happen all.
Womp womp.
But still seems good though. Yep.
I like the deck. Only like Mardu Pyromancer is a tough matchup for me.
It's apparently a good deck.
Well, yeah, it's a good deck, and the fact that it packs 20 removal main board is also a big problem.
And now you know how I feel whenever I play Alesha.
Yeah, but you have ways to reanimate your stuff.
Well, I'm playing a bit different of format than, you know, Modern can handle, so...
I mean, even I tried the Issareth, the deck, and I actually didn't get to cast it, so I'll still have to hold on for a bit more.
Whenever you say the deck, I have different ideas in my mind.
What?
Do you even remember the deck?
I only remember that... No, not really. What deck
so,
exactly
so, are you... A little bit of history lesson. Back in 1990, 4 or 5, I think. Mr. Weissman, I think, did Brian Weissman did the deck called D-Deck. It was basically the first control deck ever. You had a bunch of counter spells, a bunch of removal, and just one win condition that was the Serra Angel. That was the way you won. Just counter everything they play and hit them with the Serra Angel.
Well, that kind of sounds like blue-white control right now. Only instead of Serra Angel, you have a land.
There you go.
Serra Angel things.
It's basically Serra Angel, yeah.
So it's so that's the deck. Okay.
Yeah, nice history lesson. Indeed, that is, I guess, one of the first examples of a control deck. And it's, you know, it's sometimes it's nice to look back and to realize, like, there was a time where people were playing Magic when it was really like the Wild West, and everyone, you know, people didn't have this like established, you know, you could even say literature, this body of literature where, you know, we could learn about concepts like card advantage and tempo, you know, all of these things. Back then, people were just sort of figuring it all out as they were going along, and realizing that you could build a deck that basically just trades one for one and then tries to you know, grind out a game, gain card advantage, and then, you know, basically load the deck with answers and be threat light. That was a huge innovation at the time. And, you know, like later on, obviously people were innovating with ideas like Turbo Xerox running like a ton of cantrips, cards that, you know, basically let you look at a certain number of cards in your deck and then replace themselves, so that you could, one, run fewer lands, and two, still hit your land drops while also like hitting better cards once you've seen enough lands. You know, another huge innovation that, you know, to this day is like incredibly relevant to competitive Magic. It's cool to think about.
All right, I should do Commander of the Week, right?
I think so.
I have kind of a sad one this week. It's gonna be Alesha, and tomorrow we're going to meet for one last hurrah with her, because since I'm moving and everything, I'm going to need to collect some amount of money, so I'm going to put a lot of good cards from Alesha to sell.
That's sad.
It stings a lot, you have no idea.
Yeah.
But most of the cards I'll be able to recuperate after a while. I'm guessing like in the next year or two. But I think that things like Wheel of Fortune I'm never going to get.
Right.
Shocks and fetches, that's going to be gained quite easily.
Mm-hmm.
The foil Talia that I traded the way from Nyxia, I don't think I'm going to be able to sell that. They're just too dear to me.
Aww.
But other things like, you know, fetches, shocks, Jitte, Ancient Tomb, things like that, I'm going to get rid of.
Yeah, shocks should...
Yeah, lands don't hurt me that much. It's the other things like foils, like Stoneforge and stuff.
Yeah.
But you're not moving too far away from your usual playgroup, I
imagine. No. I'm just moving like 4 stations away with the plan.
Oh, okay.
But you need to cover the deposit and everything.
Right, of course. But, I mean, hey, you have, like, multiple decks, so...
Yeah, I think
so
I'm just
going to... okay.
I'll just proxy up what I'm going to sell, and that's it.
Yeah, and in the short term, that's obviously... as long as you have a playgroup that's cool with that, that's always a nice option.
Our playgroup has been cool with it for a long while. I've been able to proxy whatever the hell I wanted, so I haven't done anything with it.
I've been reorganizing my collection recently, and, like, it's kind of staggering how many like copies of random cards that I have. Like, I have like 7 copies of Wood Elves, and I'm like, I can't even remember how I came to acquire all of these copies of Wood Elves that I don't even play anymore.
I mean, they're always good to have.
Yeah, it's just like, where did I get these? One, because like these are not like from booster packs, and two, like, why, like, you know, why are they just kind of sitting here? I have a ton of cards like that. You know, how many copies of like Daze do I have? How many copies of Preordain and Ponder do I have? I wish I had gotten more organized from the start, because I probably would have saved a lot of money instead of rebuying a lot of these, you know, now pretty pricey cantrips and random other cards.
You can never have enough of Preordain and other type of effects.
That's fair. I do use them a lot.
Yeah. Before we go to the main topic, you guys seen what Jerry Thompson has done on the World Championships?
Yes.
Yeah, that's how I learned that the World Championship is actually...
Yeah, we want to talk about it for a couple minutes before we head to the spoilers.
Go ahead.
Yeah, tell us about it.
So, apparently Worlds have been happening this weekend, and are happening still, World Championships. And 23 out of 24 players are playing in it. Jerry Thompson has decided to protest about it. He's protesting the state of professional magic. And basically, he made a huge post that we're going to put in the show notes. But still, there is, you know, coverage is abysmal. Cheaters are still playing, not enough Pro Tour invites, and things like that. Plus, the fact that we had to find out that the worlds are happening through this escapade is kind of telling us what the state of the action is.
I mean, he wasn't just protesting just that those worlds. He was protesting those worlds, and he pointed out that the state of, like, the whole competitive play is, like, everything. Even that, remember that event where they drafted Beta?
A Silver Showcase, I think it was?
Yeah, that. He talked about that was just a complete train wreck, basically. Hmm. Because they invited three Hearthstone streams, and they invited two former pro Magic players that left Magic and were rewarded for leaving Magic, apparently.
Brian Kibler and somebody else?
Yeah. Also, Brian Kibler is kind of a Hearthstone.
Right.
He's quite the Hearthstone guy.
And actually, it's interesting that you bring up Hearthstone in this context, because, I mean, if anything, that's, like, kind of exacerbating the issue that, you know, some of the big Hearthstone tournaments are, like, so much more lucrative than some of the big Magic tournaments. And Magic is, like, a much older and, like, realistically, like, if you ask me, obviously not everyone might agree, it should be a more prestigious game to play, but it doesn't appear to be. It seems like your rewards for playing Hearthstone are so much greater without necessarily having to make even as much of an investment in terms of time, because you can kind of just do it from home on your computer while sitting in your underwear, you know, just bathing in your own filth, as I like to say. Whereas with Magic, you know, you do need to go out and play. You need to go to tournaments. You need to grind GPs. Like, it's a tough life. It's a much tougher life. You know, I say this, and I also acknowledge that, you know, I think the game is vastly better, but, you know, not everyone is going to agree, especially if they are investing a lot of time and energy into making this sort of a livelihood. So I get where Jerry Thompson is coming from, at least in that regard.
I mean, in the end, it's not even worth it. You can't make it your living to be a pro in Magic.
Right. Well, it's tough.
That's what Jim Davis was talking about in one of his recent videos. Why is he actually playing exclusively on SGG, not on the Pro Tour? Basically, he is better treated than the SGG Pro Tour, better prizes, better money, and that's it. If you want to make money living off of Magic, SGG is kind of your best bet if you're in Northern America.
Yep.
And, yeah, one of the problems is that, I mean, Wizards still, like, they refuse to get sponsored. They just don't want to be sponsored for whatever reason.
What do you mean?
Well, I don't know. Like, say that this coverage brought to you by Barnes & Noble or something like that. That would, like, bring in lots of money, and bring in lots of money can be just good for the game. I mean,
I'm not sure if Hasbro wants to actually connect with any other company on that level.
But even while they weren't affiliated with Hasbro, they didn't.
When they weren't affiliated with Hasbro, it was a much different game. And coverage and things like that were much different.
Mm.
I guess blame Hasbro then?
I mean, lots of factors are deciding upon that.
Right, yeah, it's not entirely clear this is just Hasbro's doing. In fact, I would imagine that Wizards of the Coast is probably directly implicated as far as, like, doing coverage, as far as, you know, making sure that people are aware of high-profile events like Worlds are publicized. And it turns out, like, a lot of people, you know, including Nixon, including myself, like, didn't even realize Worlds was going to be this weekend until we learned about it from Jerry Thompson. So, like, that's abysmal, as I think, yeah, to borrow words from Jerry himself.
I'm on Reddit every day, and I found out only through his post.
Right.
So that's, like, what the hell. And you would think that, you know, Worlds would be something they advertise.
Yeah, absolutely.
If only they had, you know, a certain video game that's currently being popular and had lots of space to be advertised then.
If only, yeah.
I mean, speaking of, they did make one good marketing move, and that was the MTG Arena open beta commercial.
Right.
Did you see it?
I actually didn't watch it. I'm aware of it, but I have yet to watch it. I know that Day 9 was in it, right?
Day 9 and Danny Trejo.
And right, yes, yes.
Like, what the hell?
It's an interesting pair, but I quite like both of them, so I really should check it out.
Honestly, the commercial doesn't deserve to be as good as it is.
It's like, is this from the same team that decided to put Domri Raid on booster packs rather than Liliana? Really?
Surprise, Liliana's in the set.
But yeah, this was a stroke of genius, commercial like this, and we need more things like that to make Magic actually more mainstream.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Magic's quite mainstream. Well, I mean, mainstream, I guess. People are very aware of Magic existing, but like obviously there's still a certain negative perception of it among certain people.
It's really well known if you're a nerd. You know what Magic is. But it's not like just waiting in line for a coffee shop and just playing Hearthstone, something like that. Because everyone knows what Hearthstone is. Magic, not so much.
Yeah, so my experience is like people have like they're vaguely aware, and like a lot of people are very vaguely aware of it. But like again, it's seen in sort of like a similar light as something like D&D, where it's like if you've never done it, it's just something that other people do, and like you. And there's often still a tendency to associate it with like kind of like a nerdier crowd. Like,
are we trying to say neckbeards?
Yeah. And I say this as somebody who enjoys playing D&D and who enjoys playing Magic. So obviously I don't actually believe any of that. But yeah, so my experience has been that a lot more people than I expected are aware of it existing, but they don't know like one thing about it. Whereas Hearthstone, you know, I think people are probably a little bit more... Like, it's similar in that people are aware of it, but they don't know much about it either. But, like, at least they've seen, like, a YouTube commercial about it or something like that. So, like, they're a little bit more aware about it. Or they know a little bit more about it.
Yeah. Want to get to the main topic?
Yes. The complete spoilers for Return to Ravnica, Ravnica Fuck Tron edition.
Is this the time when Tron finally dies?
Yeah, just like the last 10 times Tron died.
Turns out it's kind of a resilient deck.
Yeah. So I don't actually think like Tron is going to die. Because the thing about Modern too is like... a big part of playing Modern in my experience is like if you can kind of just coast by some of your bad matchups, it doesn't actually matter at the end of the day anyway. Like whether or not you're unfavorably positioned against the metagame. So people are still going to play Tron just because it does something very, very powerful, very, very proactive. And like, if you can just avoid the black green X decks, which
or you can be a mad lad like Nyxia is and just play those Orgrimmar Battlements,
right?
And you don't care what your bad matchups are.
Yeah, so I
because you can win by the power of random.
Yeah, I think Tron just does something so overtly busted that you can either like avoid your bad matchups or you can kind of just like. Get lucky and your opponents don't draw into the cards that stop you, or else like maybe somebody uses a certain card that I don't want to say the name of just yet on one of your Tron lands, let's say, and it just so happens that's the one you have two copies of in your hand anyway, like or you top deck it anyway, right? Like it's tough to disrupt, and the main issue is that once it gets going it can do something that's so overly powerful that you're basically just treading water trying to stop it the entire time. You're kind of just delaying. You need to have a clock while you're disrupting Tron, which is like something that people stress a lot. But like just disrupting Tron is not enough. I think like, the amount of hate that's been printed recently is going to... It hurts Tron, obviously, and it means that like decks are more equipped and like matchups that were formerly like automatic loss for you are going to be a lot better. But, it's going to take a lot more than that to totally unseat Tron just because the plan is so strong.
And also, just there are a lot of variations of Tron, so you're not going to kill them all. You might make some variation weaker, but then a new variation will arise to power.
People have been talking about Blue Tron coming back because of that. Yeah, because, you can interact with your opponent. You can play sort of fair Magic while you're just kind of slowly... grinding your Tron, which is interesting. I mean, I really like Blue Tron as a deck, but again, that it's mostly because it fits my playstyle, not because I think it's like the best variant of Tron or even remotely close.
You're trying to say you get to play Cyclone of Krypton in the Modern, so
yes, exactly. Who doesn't want
to? I'm excited about playing Time Stretch in Modern.
That's Jeez. Also a dream, yes?
I mean, like Mindslaver, stuff like that. It's always been fun.
Okay, guys. What did we first talk about from the spoilers? You want to talk about a couple of cards we haven't talked about yet, Nick? Or just do we go through all the things?
I'm pretty sure that we'll get to those cards as we're talking. Because,
yes, sir.
Honestly, after our last show, there were like two relevant cards.
Right. So I actually, I did my homework. I made a list of all the cards that I find kind of interesting. So I don't know if we want to start from that.
Sure, why not?
And I actually have them by color, so it's really easy then to find them. So basically I used the full spoiler from Wizards. So the card image gallery for Guilds of Ravnica. So I don't know if we all want to go based on that.
Oh, sure. Whatever you want to do.
So the first card I have listed here is, I don't think it's actually that great of a card, but I think that like a lot of people are going to be jamming it probably in a more casual commander context, and it's Bounty Agent. So Bounty Agent is it's a white and a colorless, so 2 mana for a 2/2. It's a bear with vigilance, and it has an ability, tap and sacrifice it to destroy target legendary permanent that's an artifact, creature, or enchantment. So why do I think that this is not going to be like super competitively relevant? Well, the problem is that it's like slow, and it's not clear that you can actually like abuse it in any appreciable way. In addition, it's in white. And so being in white means that it's kind of like not in a color you really want to be playing all that badly. But for more competitive, rather for more casual contexts, I mean, we were talking about Alesha earlier. And this is kind of just like removal on a stick that can be recurred. And, you know, it can just make somebody's day hell if you can just consistently remove their commander like turn after turn. So it seems kind of interesting. What do you think, Igor?
It's a bit slow for my taste. If it didn't require tapping it, it would be much better.
Yes, no doubt.
And plus, if you play it in Lesh, it's going to come into play tapped. So that's a bit of a bummer.
And even if you untap it, you can't tap it.
Yeah.
Right.
Unless you have a haste out, but we're putting things on a thing on a thing.
And when you put enough things on a thing, then eventually one thing will work.
Yep. But if you're playing a bit more casual version of Alesha, this might work.
Yeah, I think that that's where it's going to potentially see some play.
But honestly, would you rather play this or something like Ravenous Chupacabra?
So Ravenous Chupacabra can't destroy legendary artifacts, which can be somewhat
that's
relevant.
That's the point, but most of what people will be focusing on is killing people's commanders, right?
Yeah, and so the problem is that this can't destroy non-legendary creatures. Yeah. Right, so it's pretty much only focusing on destroying people's commanders for the most part, which is probably a little too narrow.
And if you need to kill something like an artifact or enchantment, you get to play a Duergar Hedgemage or something like that.
True, but you know, maybe mono white or Boros would be interested in a card like this.
That's a different thing.
If the narrower card pool.
Yeah, if you're playing with those two colors, yes, color combinations. This is a much better card. Something like mono white or red white taxes / hate bears.
Yeah.
If you have a way to recur it, of course.
That always helps, indeed.
One of my beefs with this card is that it's white.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not but, for know. The reason you think. It's just, it's white, so it can't kill Animar. That's my right. problem.
Which is, yeah. It can be quite relevant. I mean, obviously, if your meta has an Animar in it, then like this, obviously, like its value drops off significantly. But a lot of people don't play against Animar on any regular basis. So.
And on the other hand, not a lot of things kill an Animar. So.
It's true. Animar is quite resilient, except to Toxic Deluge, which is, you know.
That's such a wonderful card.
Such a clean answer to everything.
Base and life kill everything. Yes.
Which actually kind of segues perfectly into the next card that I thought was kind of interesting, which is another 3-mana board wipe. This one's in white. The Citywide Bust. So I don't know if you guys have...
What does it do? We've done it, but read it again.
3-mana, 2 white and a colorless for a sorcery that destroys all creatures with toughness 4 or greater. So it's very narrow, but it is a 3-mana board wipe. And 3-mana board wipes are kind of interesting.
If you play Alesha, that's going to keep most of your things alive.
Right. And in competitive contexts, there's not nearly enough creatures with 4 or greater toughness for this to like really be ever relevant. But I could see, you know, in a more casual context, again, where somebody might be playing their like mono-green monsters deck, Maybe you want this card? I don't know.
I mean, Jesse, it does kill Protean Hulk that your opponent controls.
Yo. The value Hulk.
There you go.
Your opponent gets all the value.
It does end the game, so that's good.
3 mana, we end the game. I mean, I think the rules committee needs to take a hard look at this card. 3 mana, win the game is...
No. It says 3 mana, end the game. Doesn't say you win the game.
Win the game for an opponent, yes.
Oh, that's a different thing. You're playing a Hulk Hog, basically.
3 mana, lose the game.
Aww. I mean, there is a 2 mana, lose the game. It's called playing Tybalt.
Right, or, you know, just Final Fortune. 2 mana, take an extra turn. You literally lose the game on your extra turn.
Oh, yeah, that reminds me. I really do need to look into a way to actually not lose when I start building my 8-lose modern deck. They'll run 8. Yeah. You go with 4 Glorious Scent and 4 of the new ones, the Boros one.
Right,
that also
which,
loses you the game.
I imagine we'll talk about that one later. And actually, there's probably some stuff to talk about as far as trying to break those cards is concerned. I don't know. Is there anything else about Citywide Bust? I think it could maybe be interesting and casual, but
just because
you're going to see potentially a lot of toughness for greater creatures, and if you're playing like a token strategy, then maybe you want this. But I don't know. I don't.
For tokens, yeah. It's not bad.
I think it's not an auto include in any deck that I can think of, but it's maybe the type of thing that, like, if you're like in a particular like game store meta, or you have a particular play group where like there's a specific deck that's giving you problems that runs like a lot of creatures with toughness 4 or greater, then maybe you want this. I think it's certainly a powerful enough effect to warrant looking at.
Yeah, definitely. It's a +1 mass board wipe for those casual Atraxa super friends.
Yes, except it kills Atraxa.
But you have Planeswalkers, so whatever.
I think the real combo is you just need to use Turn to Frog on Atraxa, then Citywide Bust.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
10,000 IQ play.
You can also combine this with Mirror Weave. If your opponents just happen to not have 4 toughness creatures, you can find one, transform everything into it, and, you know, kill everything that way.
For a low, low cost.
For a low, low cost of 7 mana, or, you know, you can play your, Ballista and turn everything into a Ballista and die. That's also... That might be a better...
I guess you could do that. What's next on your docket?
So I have a few more white cards that I found interesting. Did any of you have any white cards that you wanted to talk about?
You just keep on listing. We'll see if anything comes up that we want to talk about.
Sure. So I have a couple here that are kind of like, you know, nothing like super, super fancy, but could be interesting. You know, it could be nice options for more casual decks. There's Conclave Tribunal, which is 3 colorless and a white. It's an enchantment with Convoke, which means that your creatures can help to cast a spell. You can tap random creatures to basically pay for some of the colorless or even the colored mana cost if you have appropriately colored creatures. And basically, it's kind of like an O-ring effect. So you can get an O-ring effect for as little as 1 mana, which is kind of interesting if you're playing like a token strategy, because that becomes like an extremely efficient removal spell at that point. Because it hits basically everything for just 1 mana and the low, low cost of tapping like 3 random 1/1 warrior tokens. So again, not going to be competitively relevant, because in competitive, you know, those creatures are probably going to be more important for doing something else like tapping for mana anyway. It's sorcery speed, which kind of sucks, and O-ring effects are already like not the best. Like, you would maybe play them in like decks that are sort of restricted by colors, or then like maybe Xur, where you can like tutor them. And unfortunately, this is 4 mana, so Xur can't actually tutor it. But I could maybe see it, you know, if someone's playing like a Reese the Redeem deck and has like a bunch of tokens lying around all the time. 1 mana removal for just about anything in green-white is pretty sweet.
Can't you actually make it free?
You could make it free. That's true. That's pretty gross.
I mean, also, it's one of the promo foils, so it'll have sweet promo foil.
I like the art already. Like, it's kind of sweet. It's Seb, right?
The promo version has the same art, but the text box, the border is prettier.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's those promos. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, that's pretty sweet. Do you guys see yourselves playing this in any deck?
Mm, Personally, I didn't even play in the O-ring in any deck, so...
Yeah, you guys kind of are in that weird, awkward space of, like, your decks are not full competitive, but they are still kind of, like, a cut above, you know, your sort of budget casual decks that I happen to see, like, people around me playing a lot of, but I don't actually play any of myself. So I think it's an interesting card, and it definitely could see some play in Commander, but right now I'm sort of struggling to see the place for it other than maybe like dedicated token strategies.
I see it as a nice flavor inclusion in a Doran Trump deck.
Huh. Fair. Doran Trump deck?
Yeah. Don't you know I have that Doran signed by Trump.
I just got it. It's a wall tribal deck.
Kind of.
Oh, no. Shall we talk about the next card?
Yes, let's.
What's the next thing that got you interested?
So this one, we probably don't need to talk about for a very, very long, for a particularly long amount of time, but because it's not spectacular, but it's Crush Contraband, which is 3 and a white for an instant where you can choose one or both. You can exile target artifact and or exile target enchantment. So this is basically like a Return to Dust variant, but you know, it, like in some contexts, I guess it's better, and in other contexts, it's going to be a lot worse. So I don't know. It could be interesting.
It's definitely a cool card. I used to play the green version of this kind of effect that costs 5 mana.
Right.
Wow.
That was that green card. I forgot what it's called, but it destroys target artifact and target enchantment, or you can destroy another target.
It's Crush something, right?
Yeah.
It's a green card from Commander, if I remember correctly.
No, it's from Commander. From Commander is that one with land cycling? That's for 5 mana, you just exile 2 artifacts.
I think that one was actually from first printed in Commander, then later printed in Zendikar. Or something like that.
I think it was remember first correctly. Printed in Zendikar, then in
Commander. Oh, whatever. Crush Contraband, it's similar to Forsake the Worldly, but you can do both things. But is it worth it to, you know, have that 1 mana more?
Usually I would say no. 4 mana removal is not really where you want to be. I mean, 4 mana double removal is a little bit better, but I would have to be playing in kind of a very low-powered meta before I would want this. But it's an option.
I prefer Forsake the Worldly because at least it's, you know, draw a card effect.
Right.
But if you're playing mono-white, you should play this.
I mean, the main thing is that it has the potential upside of hitting 2 things for 1 extra mana, but Forsake the Worldly obviously just cycles when it's irrelevant. And yeah, you'd have to be one playing mono white and like really wanting subpar removal. And two, you'd have to be playing in a slow enough meta where 4 mana removal is going to be relevant and impactful enough.
Anything else in white that we need to talk about?
Well, we're finally getting to the interesting cards in white.
Are we? Are there any?
I think Dawn of Hope is pretty interesting. So this is a colorless and a white for an enchantment. Whenever you gain life, you may pay 2 colorless if you do draw a card. And then for 3 colorless and a white, you can create a 1/1 white soldier creature token with lifelink.
So we're back to 1 white, are we?
Well, so I could see playing this in black-white, in a black-white lifelink deck, or a life gain deck. Again, it's not going to be your most powerful option. Like, it's not obviously not going to be relevant for competitive or anything like that. But, you know, it gives you, like, a pretty strong outlet for mana. And card draw in white, obviously, is hard to come by. And card draw in black-white, that can obviously, like, trigger multiple times a turn and turn into quite a bit of card advantage is, you know, somewhat hard to come by. Are you going to play it over options like, you know, Phyrexian Arena and stuff like that? Maybe not. The thing about Necropotence is that, like, it's kind of tough to cast, right? Triple black can be hard to cast. I mean, in a life gain deck that's, like, planning on going slowly anyway, probably Necropotence is just better. It depends how much redundant card draw you want, I guess.
Honestly, black, in my mind, has card room enough that you should be covered. But that's just my opinion. Niksha, what do you say?
Well, it's nice to have another card draw option for mono-white.
That's what I said. Mono-white is going to like this. Plus, it does give you dudes.
Yeah, and I think, obviously, like, some people are thinking that you would fit it into, like, a casual Alluro deck, and I think when you're in black and blue at the point, that's when you 100% stop being interested in any of the white card draw options, just because also, they're so bad.
Also, is any Alola deck actually casual? Is it really?
Yes, I would go so far as to argue most of them.
No, I mean it's my biased opinion. It's not nice and casual. You know what I mean by casual?
Yeah.
It's not competitive, definitely, but it's not. You know, I'm just being a friendly guy here, drawing some cards. No.
Well, you are the resident life tracker, so...
also that, yes, I kind of hate that part.
And there was one last card in white that I found kind of interesting, which was Divine Visitation.
Of course.
This was kind of... I saved the best for last. So three colorless, a white and a white for an enchantment. And basically, if you would ever create a creature token, that creature token is instead going to be a 4/4 white angel with flying and vigilance.
Imagine if this was castable in Prosh.
Jesus. Jeez. I don't even want to think of it. Obviously, in a casual context, because in competitive, I mean, hey, who cares? Prosh and Food Chain wins. But you know, if you're playing like a Reese the Redeem deck or like some other type of token strategy, again, paying 3 mana and putting in a 4/4 flying lifelink is pretty strong. And like, if no one's going to combo kill you, you know, you're playing that type of magic. That's just gonna win games. Like
honestly, just having the Eldrazi. What's the thing called? Each turn you get a 0/1 token.
Oh, Visions from Beyond, I think.
Enchantment.
What am I saying?
The enchantment. Eldrazi something.
There's two of them.
Yes, there's a 4-mana and a 3-mana one.
Right.
Is it summoning stone? I don't think.
No, it's not. But so anyway, there is that enchantment for 3 mana at the beginning of your upkeep, you get the 0/1 token. That now becomes a 4/4 token.
I think, so the one I was thinking of that gives you the 1/1s is From Beyond, and then the 3 mana one is Awakening Zone.
Yeah, Awakening Zone,
yeah. Good job.
Yeah, that card does work in casual context.
Squirrel's Nest?
Oh my god. So yeah, I think token decks are going to like this card.
Why wouldn't they?
Yeah. You know, you get this and you get Doubling Season out, and all of a sudden you're making 2/4/4 white angels instead.
Not even a Doubling Season, just put a Qatar's Crusade in.
Yeah, Doubling Season.
Sheesh.
A bit stronger, I think.
Of course.
A bit higher ceiling, but obviously I think Qatar's Crusade is 5 mana instead. And you know, you're talking mono white versus green white.
Oh no, we can be in green white for Qatar's Crusade as well.
Of course. Yeah. Again, yeah.
Riz the Redeemed could pull it off.
Yeah, I mean, if you're playing that deck and you're going all in on like those types of effects, you're probably running, you know, things like Parallel Lives and all of that too, all at the same time.
That's it for white, right?
I think so.
Thank Lord. Let's carry on.
Let me just start off blue with a card that isn't good. It won't see any play, but I just have to mention that Capture Sphere. It's a literal Pokeball.
Amazing.
So there you go.
And that was important.
That was important. So Jesse, tell us about you. What do you think is actually playable in?
So actually, surprisingly, there's not a whole lot. I think there's a couple of cards here that I wanted to talk about that I think... The first one, this is not actually going to be nearly as relevant, but as like a lot of people think it might be. But you know, that said, people are going to try to jam it. So this one is it's Drowned Secrets. So it's a colorless and a blue for an enchantment. And whenever you cast a blue spell, target player puts the top 2 cards of their library into their graveyard. So on the one hand, you just know that people are going to try to put this into their mill decks, and they're going to try to make that work. And the one time out of 100 games that they win, they're going to say, I told you this card was good. And yeah, you're going to see a lot of that. I don't actually think that this card is particularly good, just because you have to cast a lot of blue spells before you actually like appreciably mill anyone. And in addition, like milling people can often backfire. They can backfire a lot of the time in Commander, it turns out.
Also, couldn't you cast Jace's Erasure for this mana cost?
Is Jace's Erasure 2 mana?
Yeah, 1 and a blue, and you whenever you draw a card, you mill for 2 cards.
Right. I think it's 1 card. Yeah.
Still,
is 1 card.
You're going to be drawing much more cards than you'll be casting blue spells, I think.
Well, so the one context where, like, and I've I've seen some people talking about this, where Drowned Secrets is maybe becomes interesting is if you do like Isochron Scepter with Dramatic Reversal and you get infinite casts of blue spells that way.
But a lot of things are good with when you have Dramatic Reversal.
Right. And that sort of begs the question of like, why am I playing a subpar general if I'm going to plan on using a broken combo like Dramatic Reversal and Isochron Scepter? Because that wins with just Thrasios in your command zone. So for a competitive context, you're never going to run Drowned Secrets. You could even just put your Isochron Scepter Dramatic Reversal into like Sirku, who pretty much just wins on the spot with that combo. But you know, if you're planning on playing like, I don't know, maybe something like Phoenix, I guess like Dramatic Reversal Isochron Scepter still just wins on the spot if you have enough mana to do it infinitely. Drowned Secrets, it seems like the type of card that like a lot of people are going to look at, think it's good, and it turns out actually it's not that good, because if you're where it's good is in places that, you know, and strategies that you probably shouldn't be trying to make that work in the first place. And that's the only place that it's good. And that's not a sign of a good card.
Womp womp.
But then, you know, moving right along, we've got a very interesting card, and that's Mission Briefing. And double blue for an instant, where you get to surveil 2, which surveil is kind of like scrying, but you can put the card into your graveyard instead of at the bottom of your library. And then you get to choose an instant or sorcery card in your graveyard after surveilling, and you get to cast that card this turn. You may pay to cast that card this turn, and then the card gets exiled. So it's kind of like flashback. Now, what's interesting is that this doesn't target compared to Snapcaster, which is like the obvious comparison. It doesn't target the spell in your graveyard, so it's less weak to graveyard hate, like a Scavenging Ooze type effect. It basically just means that you're choosing the card, which is not the same thing as targeting. As soon as Mission Briefing is resolved, you can immediately cast the card that you wanted to cast from your graveyard. So, you know, for decks that wanted like an extra Snapcaster type effect, this is pretty much it. Surveil 2 seems like it could be a worthy trade-off, you know, against the 2-1 body that Snapcaster brings. And then obviously the downside of it costing double blue is going to be like way less relevant in casual contexts, where you're just going to have a ton of mana by the late game anyway. So I think this card is very interesting, and it, you know, also interesting for other formats as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting card, especially because it's also a bit more resilient against graveyard hate, because mm-hmm. they can exile your entire graveyard in response and you can still have a target.
Exactly. Yeah, it's quite interesting from that regard.
Plus, I'm just happy to see a good Dimir card.
Well, a good, like, playable in constructed Dimir card.
Yeah.
And actually, I don't think this is the only one.
Of course not, but I'm a bit biased towards Dimir, so...
That's fair.
Let me quickly just go over a card we talked about on our show last time, or the time before, remember? A Dream Eater.
Oh, yeah.
So, I just wanted to... Now, this isn't 100% truth. I mean, confirmed. I mean, whatever. So, he says that when Dream Eater enters the battlefield, surveil 4. When you do, you may return target non-land permanent and opponent controls to its owner's hand. So, it comes into play without a target. You don't have to target before you surveil. So, after you surveil, you get to choose the target. So, what might happen... So, that's the part that is true, because it's in the release note.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a reflexive trigger. So what might happen is you kill the Dream Eater in response to his trigger. You might like lose the ability to actually return anything to their owner's hand because it's dead and that trigger doesn't happen.
Hmm.
So the card might be worse than.
So the reasoning I think for the reflexive trigger in this context is that you don't have to choose your target before you get like all the information on your surveil. So that's kind of an upside. But yeah, as you said, it does bring along some rules baggage. And I'm not actually 100% sure. I can't weigh in. I'm not a judge on whether or not what you said is true. But it does seem like something that I could see happening. Yeah. And I mean, in addition, I think that card is not particularly relevant for Commander, but that's a different story. but yeah, it's interesting because, you know, reflexive triggers are they bring rules baggage. They're like not always intuitive. You know, I think that like from a design standpoint, you kind of want to try to avoid them. But at least like on the surface, it does give this card like a little bit more depth. So I could see them like baking in a potential downside, that you know, also a potential upside. And that would be the reason why they did a reflexive trigger like that.
But there isn't really any reason to do this, because Mission Briefing doesn't have this kind of trigger, and it works just like it should. You get the information first, and then you decide your action.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, yeah, it might be. It sounds crazy enough to be actually that you kill the Dream Eater in response, you don't get to bounce anything, and that's... It's like a... Let's go on with the blue stuff.
And I mean, other than Narcomoeba, which is
best rare ever,
which is, and actually probably the most competitive, well, no, not the most, but like the second most competitively relevant card in the set. And I'm not even being facetious in saying that, because Narcomoeba has taken on a whole new importance in the competitive scene recently. Other than that, in blue, there is the final card that I found kind of neat, which is Omnispell Adept.
Oh, yeah.
So that's four colorless and a blue for a 3/4 human wizard. And then it has an ability. You pay 2 colorless and a blue. Tap it, and you get to cast an instant or sorcery card from your hand without paying its mana cost. So it's like sort of like an Arcane Artisan for instants and sorceries.
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. I think that like that's exciting. In a casual context, because in a competitive context, like, first of all, it doesn't get protection for your instant and sorcery. It's not like they're like uncounterable at that point. And paying 5 mana, waiting a turn, and then paying an extra 3 mana to cast, you know, your instant or sorcery that's probably going to cost you like 1 or 2 mana anyway, is like clearly not a good play in competitive. But in casual, you know, if you're doing something like playing this and then playing like, I don't know, Enter the Infinite, you know, that could be a plan. That could be strong. Also, like, certain sorceries, being able to play them at instant speed, like what this seems to allow you to do, that could also be interesting.
You know, what do you think? Is this the card that finally makes the Rules Committee ban Paradox Engine?
No.
Because I mean, Paradox Engine works really well with Paradox Engine.
Many things work really well with the Paradox Engine.
Yeah, but this one is like, really well with Paradox.
Is it though?
Well,
because
yeah.
In Derevi, I can make much better things work with Paradox Engine than this.
You know what works really well with Paradox Engine? Cards that you wanted to play anyway because they're efficient and cheap.
Yeah.
What this card works really well with is something like a Tooth and Nail.
Oh, definitely.
I heard that's pretty good for 3 mana.
Kind of a good card.
I'm pretty sure you can still pay the entwine cost.
Yeah, you can.
Anyway,
you can still play the entwine cost.
So, you know, 5 mana Tooth and Nail instead of 9 mana Tooth and Nail seems pretty reasonable.
Pretty decent.
Yeah, seems fair. So, so I think, you know, I see a world where people are going to play this card.
You know what card I'm liking just because of the fun factor against Tribal? Selective Snare. X and a blue sorcery, return X type of creatures of the creature type of your choice to their owner's hand. Not good, just, you know, a fun thing. Or you can just name humans and bounce a bunch of stupid things.
Oh, yeah, this bounce is nice.
Or elf, or whatever.
So if that card was an instant, it would actually potentially be interesting, but...
If it were an instant.
Is that true for, like, every card in Magic?
Yeah. I mean, but it's already restrictive enough that, like, it feels like it would be an instant.
This is more of a drafting, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, against tokens, quite strong.
It's depending on the number of tokens they have, of course.
Yeah. So if I was playing blue and limited, like, I don't know that I would main deck this, but probably I would, just because, like, at minimum, it's going to be, like, a colorless and a blue bounce a creature.
Yeah.
At sorcery speed. But then the upside of being able to just permanently deal with a bunch of tokens for, like, a reason, like, you know, a not unreasonable amount of mana, that's pretty strong. So probably potentially main deckable, like, if you don't have, like, you know, much, much better options. and in Commander, I mean, you know, maybe I could see a place where I play this. Not in competitive, but in casual, you know.
If your opponents are playing a lot of tribal decks, sure.
Yeah.
Especially if it's Tribal Dragons or something like that.
Right. Exactly. So you want it to be a tribal deck where they're playing like big fatties, because otherwise, like, you're losing quite a bit of tempo just to bounce their cards. You know, if you're bouncing a bunch of one mana elves, like, you're not accomplishing a whole lot.
I'm a bit disappointed by the lack of three power evasive. For Sig.
Oh yeah, fair.
There is just one card I want to mention, not because it's good, but because you'll see why. The Wishcoin Crab, just for the flavor text. It's 3 and a blue. It's a 2/5 crab. Who cares? But what wishes do they grant? Mostly pinching related ones. I just love that.
That's a dad joke.
I like dad jokes. Shut up.
It's a pretty classic, like, you know, Magic type flavor text.
Yeah, I just love this new text.
Yeah, like, he has the right to bear arms.
Oh, that's a classic. That's a classic.
He exercises his right to bear arms. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So I mean, it's great to see, like, nice tongue in cheek sort of flavor texts like that, because they have like a long history. You know, and there's also the Lemur card. Well, I mean, they printed later on.
Oh yeah.
They printed on later. Yeah, the actual Lemur, which made a harken back to their original mistake with the art for, what was it, Vicious Lemurs or whatever?
Something like that, and then you see Cuddly Monkey.
Yeah, Hyalopterus Lemur.
Oh yeah.
The flavor text is so good.
Is it Norn the Wary?
What?
Is it Norn the Wary?
Is it, I think Norn the Wary is saying it on the later card.
Oh yeah.
That is like a reference to the earlier one, but the original one is, the Lemurs looked harmless until they descended upon my troops. Within moments, only bones remained. And then the art actually shows like a lemur, like with like little fairy wings, and it's like the most adorable thing ever.
Look at this dangerous little fellow.
And then, here we go. So it's Viscid Lemurs.
Yeah.
Lemurs, is that all? Finally, something harmless. Yeah, good stuff. I think that means we're done with the blue cards.
We are. Want to move to black?
Yes, with pleasure. Do any of you have any cards that immediately stand out to you?
Well, one of the cards I immediately almost liked was Blood Operative. So it's a 1 and double black for a 3/1 Vampire Assassin. So 3 mana for a 3/1 is, I mean, okay, I can almost live with that. It has lifelink, and when it enters the battlefield, you may exile target card from a graveyard, which is kind of okay, a bonus effect. And whenever you surveil, if Blood Operative is in your graveyard, you may pay 3 life and then return it to your hand. And I like that returning to your hand part. The you needing to surveil part, if it was like at the start of your turn, if he's in your graveyard, just pay 3 life and return it, that would be.
Yeah, so I think that this card is not at all good.
Nope.
Sorry to say it, and I'm sorry to say it in
such cool
terms. But I think like exiling just one card from a graveyard for 3 mana is, one, not where you want to be. A 3/1 with lifelink is like not really special in Commander. And then needing to surveil is kind of like the bigger problem. Yeah. Because there are decks that would love like a recursive creature like this, you know, like there's like the Liliana, like Pox type decks that really like to have like you know, blood gas type creatures that can keep coming back so that they can, you know, break parity on some of their stacks effects. But this one requires you to surveil, and there just isn't really enough playable surveil cards at the moment, and especially not if you're playing like mono black. And then, you know, this is not going to fit into like Vampire Tribal, because as far as like the body is concerned and the effect, it's not really all that relevant. It doesn't fly, like, you know, if that even meant anything. But, you know, it could be a solid limited card.
Just to mention that these are probably the only surveil cards.
I'm sad about that. I like the mechanic.
Yeah, I agree. The mechanic is really cool. And it is a little sad that it's, well, at least so as far as we know, it's going to be restricted.
I mean, they could make it evergreen.
But, yeah, but I don't know that they will.
They will not, most likely, but it's not that complex.
Right, the design space for it is quite large. It's not that complex. I think like one of the bigger challenges with Surveil is that it's so close to Scry already.
Yep.
that it's kind of like, oh, how do we choose when we're going to put Surveil on a card versus Scry? It kind of just feels like really, really close. And it's fine, like, in a small amount, right? Like, if you're doing it in a set like this where you can put Surveil on everything, then it's great. And then you can obviously, like, make Surveil feel like its own thing. But then in other sets where it's like, oh, are we going to put Surveil or Scry on this card as upside? You probably want the card to then have, like, some kind of relevance in the graveyard. And so that limits the design space for Surveil as far as, like, an evergreen type word is concerned, or evergreen type mechanic is concerned.
So what's next?
I was going to start with Creeping Chill, and I just wanted to say one thing. This card is interesting. I don't think it's playable. Obviously not in Commander. Having only one of them is totally irrelevant. But, you know, some people have been, like, talking about how this could be playable in, like, Dredge-type decks, where, you know, you just kind of get some free damage in by dredging it. I'm not the expert on Dredge, you know, not even close. But maybe there's something there. You know, it's kind of a free spell for those types of decks, which is always neat.
Because mostly they win with combat damage if they're not exiling their whole graveyard for that flashback.
Right, yeah. So most Dredge decks, like even in Vintage and in Legacy, are going to win through combat damage. And yep. And the biggest issue with Creeping Chill there is that it's not really clear that you would need like 3 free damage when you're going to have like a board with 20 power on it on turn 3 anyway. So I think that it's a really interesting design, but I don't know that the power level is quite good enough, especially because like it's also going to get stuck in your hand some amount of the time.
Yeah, that's the
one. Yeah. But in some matchups, it could be interesting, right? Because you also gain the 3 life. So, like, if it ever comes to a racing situation, maybe it's interesting. But I still think you're massively favored in those contexts anyway. So, probably not playable. But anyway, I think Doom Whisperer. I think Nixia really wants to talk about Doom Whisperer.
Yep.
I mean, Doom Whisperer is just a cool guy. I mean, I like him for Karador, for obvious. It's just that the paying 2 life will, at some point, become... And so I'll have to see what I can do about that. I mean, I already have that, what's it called, Torgar, that will bring me back up to half my health. So I guess I've got that going.
I have to beg to differ. I don't think paying 2 life is really all that relevant. I mean, like, at a certain point, you just stop and you just content yourself with your 6/6 flying trample for 5 mana.
I know that's that is the good part of this card. But still, you cannot have enough value.
Never stop, never stopping.
Something like that.
So some of my buddies were talking about this card potentially being good in the Gitrog monster. And I think we ultimately settled on, like, probably not for, like, competitive Gitrog. But if you're playing a sort of a slightly less powerful version of the deck. Because there it's like pay 2 life, Surveil 2. If you see a land on top of your deck, put it in your graveyard, draw a card. So that's pretty exciting. Pay 2 life, draw a card. You know, are we Grizzlebrand? and obviously then, like, as long as you keep finding lands on top, you can keep going. Or, you know, you just basically, like, keep whatever card on top that you want, because the Gitrog monster just loves having things in his graveyard anyway. So, you know, if you're not playing Ad Nauseam, this seems like it could be a good card, like, in its place.
And not just Karador and Gitrog monster, any reanimation style decks like Cedris. This is a really good card in Cedris.
Right.
And any other graveyard shenanigans deck. It fuels your graveyard extremely well.
You can play it in... what's the guy who makes nightmares?
Oh, yeah, yeah, in...
Chainer.
Chainer. Yeah.
Dementia Master.
Dementia Master, yeah. You can also play this in Kalia.
Yeah.
And you're in colors that have trouble with card advantage anyway. So, like, could be interesting there because it's not strictly card advantage, but it is virtual card advantage. And you get to put it into play for free.
And it's a 6/6 flying trample.
That's a 6/6 flying trample.
A nightmare demon to boot.
It has an incredible creature typing.
Yep.
Unfortunately, it's not a horror demon, so it gets bounced by the thing in the ice.
Oh, no.
I know, right?
Unplayable, literally unplayable.
I think, if I find any copies, I will absolutely just burn them because it's unplayable.
Thing I want to talk about is Mausoleum Secrets.
Oh, yeah.
So what do you think about that?
What do I think about it?
Yep.
All right. So this card, I like that they're taking some risks with this card, printing like, you know, efficient, you know, mostly, well, not even mostly, but like somewhat unrestricted tutors, but mostly just efficient tutors and at instant speed. But this one has like just one too many conditions for it to like see widespread play. So it's a colorless and a black for an instant that has undergrowth. And undergrowth is the Golgari mechanic in Guilds of Ravnica. And it says, search your library for a black card. So it has to be a black card with converted mana cost less than or equal to the number of creature cards in your graveyard. Reveal it, put it into your hand, and then shuffle your library. So it's no demonic tutor. And like when you're looking at the two mana cost and the instant, like initially you're like, oh my god, could this be a better demonic tutor? But then you realize it has to be a black card, which that's so rough that it has to be a black card, because it means you can't even get a land with like zero creatures in your graveyard. And speaking of that downside, you also need to have a certain amount of creatures. So, you know, it has like one too many downsides, I think, to be widespread playable and competitive. But there's some decks that are absolutely going to want it. I think like, what's her name? Marin. Yes, Marin is going to love this card for sure. And then, you know, mono black decks might be a little bit more interested in it. There's a few decks that are potentially interested in this card for competitive. And in casual, I could see this being a pretty strong card just because games tend to go longer. You're going to have more creatures in your graveyard because of repetitive board wipes. And you're probably playing more just generally useful black cards. In competitive, your black cards are going to be like ad nauseum rituals and then just more tutors, like for the most part. And like tutoring for a tutor is not really what you want to do most of the time. Tutoring for ad nauseum is what you want to be doing most of the time, but you're going to have five creatures in your graveyard, and those two things don't really go together very well. And then, you know, tutoring for a ritual, well, that's not all that exciting. I mean, I guess it could get Yawgmoth's Will if you have three creatures in your graveyard, but again, like, those two things don't go super, super well together anyway. So I think it's a little too restrictive, but I'm excited about the design.
Basically, yeah. You summed it up pretty well, I think.
Yeah, go on.
I was going to say, any card that, like, inches into, like, the realm of CEDH playable immediately gets dissected by the community, like crazy. So I have, like, a lot of thoughts about any cards that are, like, in particular pretty close to competitively playable or potentially competitively playable in a certain deck.
I have a card that's not even CEDH playable, but I might just find some uses for it. And that card is a Lotleth Giant.
Oh.
So it's a 6 and a black for a 6/5 zombie giant with undergrowth. When it enters the battlefield, it deals 1 damage to target opponent for each creature card in your graveyard. And now, obviously, it's kind of decentish in Karador, where I can sort of fill my graveyard up with creatures, since I'm mostly playing creatures. But it's also interesting in Gyrus because of my dredge plan. And sometimes Gyrus will get Lotleth Giant by himself, and other times I'll just reanimate it and get in some, like, a decent chunk of damage.
How much do you have to ding your opponents with to make this worth it?
I'm going to say 14.
That's a tough sell, though.
That is a tough sell. And even for Gyrus, like, Gyrus needs to be, what, like a 7? He needs to be a 7/7 to reanimate this?
Yeah.
Which means you have to spend, like, 10 mana on him unless you're, like, proliferating the counters on him or whatever. And then also, you only get to do that one time because he exiles, right?
Yep.
So, it's not Kokusho. Like, Kokusho, it is not. But it is an interesting card.
I'm just saying you can get, like, just completely random wins with this really random card.
If it's a stall and you have only one opponent left, yeah.
You could also be playing Yuriko and just, like, flip Draco off the top of your deck and deal 16 damage to each of your opponents.
That's the point.
There was actually another black card that I didn't want to talk about, but I had one last thing to say about Lawless Giants. Sorry, I'm a little all over the place here. But this card, actually, people have been pretty excited about it for Dredge. Playing it as like a one copy, like a just one copy of it, because you can dread return it after like dredging 20 creatures into your graveyard mm-hmm. and just kill your opponent on the spot. So, like, yeah, this card, I think 100% will see constructed play in some deck.
Plus, that deck isn't Dread Returning stuff actually powering this guy?
Well, if you're not just sacrificing zombie tokens, yes.
Yeah. I mean, you most often sacrifice Nakomibas first.
Yep. If you're not first like going for Cabal Therapy, sacrificing your Narcomoebas, getting a bunch of tokens off of your bridges from
depending what you do.
Yeah. So 100%, like your sacrificing can feed the undergrowth ability, but Dredge is like the one deck that like I'm not really worried about their ability to feed undergrowth. Like that's the plan. That's the game plan.
But, scheduled.
Exactly. You know, if you're not enabling undergrowth, something's going horribly wrong.
The rest in peace is happening. That's what's happening.
And then you're basically losing hard.
Not necessarily. You still have the hollow ones.
Yeah, if you're on the hollow one plan, right.
Honestly.
People, I think, bored into hollow one post, like in games 2 and 3. In vintage dredge, like especially.
That's the one I actually mostly watch, so.
Right. But, I mean, that kind of means you need to, like, draw into your hollow ones. So, like, then, I mean, I guess that's not the hardest thing for Dredge to do. But at the same time, Vintage is such a strong format that, like, a bunch of 4/4s that if they don't come down really quickly, that just being in the deck, you know, it might not actually be relevant enough quickly enough.
Yeah, but most of the time, if you're not winning quickly with Dredge, you're not winning at all, so.
Right. That's kind of what I'm getting at. There was one more card I wanted to discuss. Because we've known about this card for some time, but you know, some people were kind of interested in it, and I'm here to basically ruin everybody's fun as far as this card is concerned, or you know, spoil the optimism. But it's a gruesome menagerie.
Oh yeah, I skipped it because of obvious reasons. But you please tell us what it is.
So 3 colorless, 2 black for a sorcery. Choose a creature card with converted mana cost 1, 2, and 3 in your graveyard, and return all the 3 cards to the battlefield from your graveyard. So you get 3 creatures back at 3 different converted mana costs, and it's basically triple reanimate for small creatures. Now, it could be interesting because, like, it can set up certain combos pretty well. Problem is that it's basically just worse buried alive, like substantially worse buried alive. And buried alive can often just win with, like, itself and then, like, a 1-mana reanimate spell. This doesn't actually set up the cards in your graveyard, so it requires something else to do that. This is just the reanimation spell. So, like, some people were kind of interested in it at first, but I think it's unfortunately, like, it's not going to be strong enough. And it's also, like, kind of tough to cast it. Or I guess, do you have to be... No, you don't have to choose creatures at every converted mana cost for
you do.
Oh, you do. So you can't even cast it a lot of the time.
I mean, you could play it in your Alesha decks, but I would advise against it, honestly.
Yeah, so it's a card that I think like people were excited about when it got spoiled, quote unquote. You know, when it leaked.
Yeah.
But then it turns out, you know, we just already have better options.
If I remember correctly, I wasn't even stoked back then. Is that correct,
Mixer? Yeah, it was kind of random.
It was just like for that mana cost, he could be doing better things, like you know, Karma Guide and actually winning the game.
Exactly.
I mean, I think that the reason people were kind of excited is because it, like, modern playable.
Is it?
Well, you have a backup win condition when your collected company fails. You can get, like, the whole combo back from your graveyard with Gruesome Menagerie.
That's interesting.
That's a sideboard, I guess, option?
I think people are usually just splashing black in those decks, though, no?
I mean, you play Abzan anyway, yeah.
You have so, birds, so...
True. Double black might not be so bad.
You're splashing any color you want.
Beyond that, there's Playcrafter, which we don't have to say a whole lot about, because it's basically just a, you know, it's basically just a replacement for existing cards.
Well, the most interesting part is that it targets Planeswalkers as well.
Right.
On a
and
creature.
Also, for your finally, you know, we have a version of Merciless Executioner that says, you know, oh, if any of your opponents don't have creatures in play, there's still a downside for them. And I think that's the part about
this.
Yep,
that's really good.
So, yeah, so for the same mana cost as Merciless Executioner, I think potentially even better stats or, like, similar stats. Maybe they're the same.
Better.
When it enters the battlefield, each player sacrifices a creature or planeswalker, and then each player who can't discards a card. So you're always going to have a creature to sacrifice, because you'll just sacrifice your play crafter. Then each of your opponents will sacrifice a creature or planeswalker, which is already a pretty big improvement. And then, you know, if they don't have creatures because they're playing like a very creature-like deck, well, hey, turns out you're also going to get a hit. So, you know, you guys, you can go rip up your Merciless Executioners.
Unless you're playing a zombie deck in that case.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess the creature typing can be relevant. But, you know, shamans.
I just wish this was a 2-2 instead of a 3-2.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I would really gladly 2-2 for this and with the Recruiter's Innovation.
Well, Recruiter of the Guard can...
It can, but that's what I was going to say. I might actually even play this. I'm not hating the effect as much. I'll see.
Well, I mind it being a shaman and not a wizard. I would really like it to. But another potential upside is it's a human, and that's kind of relevant for Modern.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
So
yeah, because
if a pesky planeswalker, say, I don't know, Teferi or Ugin appear, you can kill them without having a board, actually.
That's gross. That's gross.
That's not a bad way to look at it. That's not a bad way to look at it.
Just sacrifice your Karn, please.
Yeah, you'll sacrifice your Playcrafter, no problem.
Oh no, my Playcrafter, anything but that.
I mean, usually Tron decks will remove Karns against humans because Karns are kind of used against aggro decks.
Yes.
A bit slow.
And if they resolve the Ugin, you might be losing, but this guy actually offers you a fighting chance.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it kills an Ulamog because, no.
Oh.
Indestructible doesn't. Sacrifice doesn't care about your indestructible.
Nice. Jeez.
Yeah, this card is, it seems like it could be the real deal in a few different formats. Definitely, it's a lot of powerful text for, like, a pretty aggressively costed body, too. A 3-mana 3-2, like, it's decent. Decent.
Not a bad card.
Not a bad card at all. After that, there was Ritual of Soot, which is, like, destroy all creatures with converted mana cost 3 or less. Damnation. I mean, yeah, it's not that interesting, but...
It's a wrath.
You know, it's a wrath. And it's going to be cheaper than Damnation and, like, just as good a lot of the time.
That's the point.
I like the fact that they made 2 board sweepers in this set.
Yeah.
Like, the whole time they were saying that they don't want to make Wrath of God because it's too powerful. And they make all these different loops that you have to jump through. I mean, hoops. You have to jump through to make them kind of good. Like them, and then they just flat out just make 2 board sweep same set.
You know what I like? That both white and black rats can't touch the hexproof horse from the core set.
Right.
Yeah.
So Nixer, there's actually 3 rats in this set. Because there's the Boros one.
Oh yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The one that does damage to everything. So, there's a lot of rats in this set, which is kind of, like, mostly why I wanted to point them out, because I find that quite interesting.
That is, but let's move to the red, shall we?
Please.
So, in red, what do we have interesting?
We have a card that has, like, an amazing name, but it's actually complete garbage. It's Cosmotronic Wave.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's called Cosmotronic Wave. It has an epic art of some guy's head exploding, and all it does is for 3 and a red sorcery speed, it deals 1 damage to each creature your opponents control, and they can't block this. What?
Screw the mana elves.
Whatever. Come on.
I mean, look, like, they were really afraid of printing mana dorks back into standard. You know, putting Llanowar elves into Dominaria was a very big risk. So we better print Goblin Chain Whirler and Cosmotronic Wave in the same standard just to make sure that things don't go totally out of control.
I mean, it's a common rat.
Yeah.
But still, so, Cosmotronic Wave is such a good name.
So it's a sideboard card for limited, right? Because if someone's playing the Selesnya or Boros token strategies, you maybe bring this in.
But you know what's an actually interesting card to talk about? Experimental Frenzy.
Yeah.
Three and a red. It's an enchantment. You may look at the top card of your library at any time. You may pay the top card of your library. Three and a red. Destroy Exponent of Frenzy. Now, why do we want to destroy the Exponent of Frenzy? Well, there is one more line of text. You can't play cards from your hand.
It sounds like a card that, you know, you just want to give to someone. Just offer it as an offering of your friendship.
Do you know?
Wouldn't it be very nice if, like, you could also just, like, draw a card and gain a life every upkeep for giving it to somebody? I wonder what deck is interested in this card.
If there were only a commander that did that. If only.
Only. I mean, it's pretty interesting design space. I'm sure Wizards will eventually get to it. Hints, I think it should be in every color except green, because the addition of black would probably make it a lot stronger.
Yeah.
Now, if only we had that commander.
Oh, well.
One day.
So, one day, maybe.
Nick, I want to talk about a goblin or two?
The goblin that actually...
kills Tron.
People talk about Tron killers all the time, and they talk about some Assassin's Trophy or some other card we might talk about later, but the real Tron killer isn't actually a goblin. And no, I'm not talking about Goblin Crater Maker. I'm talking about Goblin Locksmith. Because Tron...
You got me.
My Tron...
You got me.
My Tron runs walls. And those walls block stuff. And when you put in a Goblin Locksmith that says my walls can't block, now we have a problem. Also, the art looks like it's one of those... combine cards for unstable.
Yeah.
You know how it looks to me? Like the goblin opened the door, but he just really wanted to smash the window.
Well, he has to examine the lock from both sides, doesn't he?
Wow. But yeah, apparently Wizards of the Coast are listening to our podcast and they really hate Nyxia's deck. Nyxia, what's the Crater Maker, by the way?
It's one and a red for a 2/2 goblin that... you can pay one and sacrifice it to deal 2 damage to target creature or destroy target Emrakul.
Hey, it destroys any artifact, too. Not any artifact. Most artifacts.
It also kills a Karn and Ugin.
It also kills a Karn or an Ugin. Wow. F. Tron. This card is interesting. It's immediately constructed playable, like, for goblin decks. And other decks that might just want, like, a random hoser for Tron. That can double as just random removal for tiny creatures. But, you know, what caught my eye with this card is that it's, for competitive, it's a warrior. And as you know, based on my commander of the day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Najeela really cares about things being warriors. And so this is a warrior with upside. Now, I don't know that I'm actually going to play this, but it's like one of those cards that I can have in like my maybe board. Maybe one day I would be interested in playing this card because, well, 2 damage to any creature. Can kill like an Aven Mind Sensor, it can kill Timna, can kill a few sort of annoying creatures like Dark
Confidence.
Yeah, I'm less interested in that. But then it destroys artifacts too. So like it's always gonna be relevant and it can just swing under Najeela to create warrior tokens. It's kind of like an Abraid that you can't hold in your hand and use at instant speed. So it's interesting. I think unfortunately, like the card pool has gotten to the point now where like there's just not space for this card because it's like just not quite strong enough, like compared to other removal options. But like if we didn't have quite as many good cards, because like let's say we weren't playing 5 color good stuff, then this would be a potential contender.
Yeah. Do we have anything else left in red that's actually good?
For commander, I don't.
Not
I don't
really.
See anything really.
So, I have one, like, I guess you can call it, like, an honorable mention card. And you guys are going to find this strange, but it's Torch Courier. Torch Courier, which is a 1 red for a 1/1 with haste. And it has an ability, Sacrifice Torch Courier. Another target creature gains haste until end of turn. So this card is interesting for competitive, specifically, because it actually can fit into, like, Protean Hulk piles. To potentially do some interesting stuff where you like, let's say give a Hermit Druid haste and then immediately use your Hermit Druid or, do some other stuff, where you would, in the past have required haste. Now we have a 1 mana card that can fit really easily into Protean Hulk piles. So it remains to be seen how this card might be broken in that context. But
yeah, I can see that.
But it's interesting. Yeah, it's a cool option to have and it later down the line, once things sort of, you know, with new cards being printed or you know, once something gets figured out, I could see this card seeing some play. But yeah, not much else to be said about that for now.
Moving to green?
Green cards, yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Beastus is obvious one.
Right.
Of course.
Because it's really nice to have a glimpse of nature on the stick.
Yeah.
And it being an elf.
And it's an elf.
And it's not six mana.
Yeah. I mean, hey, like, Yisan is going to want this. Like,
yeah.
A lot of casual decks are going to want this. I think, like, pretty clearly Anamar wants this. Because Anamar just loves creatures replacing themselves. Like,
put it into Prosh so you can actually, you know, have even more drawing of cards whenever you cast your Prosh.
Yeah. This card is the real deal, I think, for certain decks. Like, there's some decks that are really interested in this card, for sure.
There's not much to say about this card because it's nice, simple, and easy and good.
Yeah, everyone likes to draw cards, and if you're a deck that casts creature spells, why not draw cards while casting creature spells?
A card that's not going to be seen in competitive, but in normal EDH, it might be is the route.
Circuitous?
Yes, whatever the thing is.
I'm the token English speaker.
Yeah, for the three and a green, search your library for up to two basic land cards and or gate cards, put them on the battlefield tab, then shuffle your library. It's not, you know, something like Cultivate. It's similar to Sky Shall Claim, but you can get duels, but gates and basic land cards might be just good enough for, you know, your regular green X deck.
Well, you know, Maze's End is still a card
that... It is, but even without that, this still might be good enough.
Yeah, getting getting gates is actually really powerful for the casual side.
Yeah.
So it's really powerful in a very not powerful context.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
I guess I agree where that this is worse than existing options. For more competitive decks, 4-mana ramp is absolutely not where you want to be. But, you know, I have seen like Maze's End decks. They exist like in more casual contexts. Like, there's a place for this card for sure, and I think it's in that deck.
One card we have to mention just because of the silly art and flavor text is the Generous Trait. For 2 and a green, it's a cat. When it enters the battlefield, draw a card, and it's a 1/2. Cats place their gifts with care so that the barefoot will step on them in the middle of the night. I have a cat. I can confirm this.
I have 3 cats, and half the time, the gift that the cat places is itself.
Yeah.
And it literally just gets in your way, and you trip over it, and you get horribly injured. The cat is just... They're just fucking assholes.
mine is not putting itself, you know, as a barrier. No, it just waits and then tries to jump at you.
Yeah.
Problem is, he goes to jump, and then he looks at it, and he's like, oh no, this guy's bigger than me. Because he tried to attack him a couple of times and just pinned him down to the floor. He couldn't move. He was like, okay, crap. He's stronger. Let's not do this.
So now my cats give to... 0 fucks.
You haven't been dominant enough, I think. I'm telling you, just pin them to the floor and don't let them move a bit, because then they'll freak out. And then you'll see you're more powerful. Don't remember.
Yeah, I think I try not to do anything like potentially... like harmful to my cat. There's probably a way to do it, obviously, where you don't hurt them.
It's simple. Just put your index finger and your thumb around their neck so they can move, but just put those fingers firmly to the ground.
We're a competitive cat raising podcast now.
There we go. Yeah. Basically, they also need to know that you're the dominant one. So.
Yeah, I mean, forget like the whole like I'm the only one who gives you food thing.
I also feed this bastard, and he still tries to fight me.
Interesting. Well, my cats don't—they don't try to fight me. Actually, like they don't try to scratch me. Like they're really good natured in that regard. They just—they're just like stupid. They just do stupid things. I don't think any amount of like trying to dominate them will help.
My cat, I think, is actually fighting me for the number 2 spot because he sees my girlfriend as, you know, the top cat in the family, and he tries to fight me for the number 2 spot.
Interesting. Maybe that says a lot about you that the cat actually thinks it stands a chance.
I mean, cats, the meta cats are actually pack animals. They just see the rest of the human family as the part of the pack.
Interesting. I always thought that was the opposite of the truth, that they don't see humans as being conspecifics. Interesting. There is another green card that I wanted to talk about.
Which one? The Ferroxor?
Well, so that card I don't think is relevant for
it is not.
For Commander. But no, there's another green card that's relevant for Commander. It's Crawl Harpooner.
Oh.
Okay. Not what you're expecting. So it's a colorless and a green for a 3/2 Insect Warrior.
Oh. Now,
the fact that it's a warrior is not relevant here, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
But it has reach, and it has an ability, Undergrowth. When it enters the battlefield, choose up to one target creature with flying you don't control. Crawl Harpooner gets +X/+0 until end of turn, where X is the number of creature cards in your graveyard. Then you may have Crawl Harpooner fight that creature. So where is this relevant? Well, it turns out it's relevant in Yisen, where Yisen has like just an absolute horrible time dealing with cards like Linvala. And now we have like a creature that basically just kills Linvala. That's not Somberwald Stag, which is really nice.
Plus, it's a 3/2 for 2 mana. That's kind of okay.
It's not bad. Yeah.
With reach.
It can also deal with like Aven Mind Sensor and stuff like that. So it turns out there's like a decent amount of flying creatures that just give that give Yisen headaches. So like more answers to those is just always nice, and especially when they're on creatures, that's when it's really nice, because green has a hard time, you know, finding its like sorcery or instant answers, but finding creatures is not as bad. So
yeah.
So A plus card.
Anything else, Nixon?
Oh, well, I was thinking to say Pelt Collector.
Really? You weren't going to mention the worm?
It's a warrior.
It's an elf.
And it grows like it's like a evolve.
It's like Experiment 1.
Yeah,
it's basically Experiment 1.
Yeah, so I quite like this card, actually. It's funny that you mentioned that, because I played a lot of Mono Green Stompy for a while because I didn't want to invest in an expensive Modern deck. So I actually built Mono Green Stompy. So this card is like has a place close to my heart. And yeah, I think for that context, this is a fantastic card. It's going to be a 3/3 a lot of the time. All you're trading is like the ability to regenerate it, which is not irrelevant actually. But if you wanted to play like a lower to the ground Mono Green Stompy, now you have like an extra one drop that can grow, which is pretty nice.
And
so,
trample is kind of relevant.
Right. And when creatures die is also quite relevant, because it turns out people play removal on your creatures a lot.
Wait, what?
In Modern, of all formats.
Wait, what? But,
this is shockingly good with Stranglroot Geist.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they kill your Stranglroot Geist, let's say your Pelt Collector's a 1/1. Well, first of all, let's say they kill your Stranglroot Geist. Well, immediately this is going to become a 2/2. Then Stranglroot Geist enters the battlefield as a 3/2 because of Undying. So Pelt Collector immediately becomes a 3/3.
Nice.
I believe that's how that works.
It should, yes.
Because I don't believe Undying is a trigger. I think it enters the battlefield. It's a replacement effect.
No, it's a trigger.
Return it to the battlefield with a +1/+1. Right.
But when it dies.
Yeah.
Right. So, but the thing is, it's a trigger that happens when it dies,
yes,
not when it
needs it. It will die. It will die.
Yeah, it will die.
So, yeah.
And
you, it will come back into play with the +1/+1 counter already. So Pelt Collector will see its power.
Yeah. It's time for multicolored.
Yes. Finally.
So, first thing we need to talk about is the trophy, right? How good
is it? I've been waiting all morning to talk about this card. All afternoon for you fine gentlemen.
So the trophy.
Yeah. I mean, I think you guys should cover this one, because I can talk for a while.
We already did when it was first spoiled, and our conclusion was, it's stupidly good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, hey, it's a game changer, literally.
Niksha, how much does it kill Tron?
Not enough. Well, for me, I won't mind it.
Because walls.
Because walls, yeah.
Destroy target permanent.
Yep. And then you have something like Cat Jesus out, and they can't even search the library.
Gross. Mm. So, so for competitive, it's interesting because some people are like actually not immediately sold on this card. I am, because like screw it, like I just like strong cards, and I like really versatile removal. But I can kind of understand the reasoning why you wouldn't run it, want to run it. It's it doesn't have the uncounterable clause of Abrupt Decay, which is super valuable, and the casting cost is a little restrictive for like 4 and 5 color decks. But I say to hell with it. I'm gonna be greedy, and obviously like ramping your opponents kind of sucks too. That being said, this is like another removal spell that you can jam into like Thrasios, Time Twister Loop type decks, which are decks that basically don't necessarily have to run any dedicated win condition, like something like an Aetherflux Reservoir that will like pew-pew your opponents to death. Instead, what this deck is going to try to do is it's going to just try to loop a card that you're like happy to play just otherwise, like throughout the course of the game, to win the game. And so what you're going to do here is you're just going to cast your Assassin's Trophy to destroy whatever permanent they have, whatever you want. Sure, they can go get their basic land. That's not a problem. But then you're going to, you know, draw your deck with Thrasios with infinite mana, cast Time Twister to put Assassin's Trophy back into your deck, draw Assassin's Trophy again, and you're just going to keep doing this over and over again. Eventually, they're going to run out of basics, but more importantly, eventually, they're going to run out of permanents. so, like, you know, you don't lose from that position. Like, even if you don't have a dedicated win condition in your deck, you've won the game on the spot for all intents and purposes, right? Because if they play their land for turn and then they try to do something, well, you'll just counter it because you can draw your whole deck. You have infinite mana. You have every counter spell in your deck. And then when it finally becomes your turn again, you'll just destroy it again. So, like, GG. Well played. It turns out my removal spell that was already kind of busted is also my win condition. And that's competitive commander for you in a nutshell.
What we talked about on the podcast is just stupidly good.
Oh, yeah. Hey, removing everything. Like, as far as I'm concerned, like, this card, if it can destroy a Tabernacle at Pendril Vale even one time when I'm playing the Vila, it will have earned its spot.
It kills lands. How good is that?
Yeah, it's pretty nutty.
I don't think there's anything we can say that hasn't already been said about this card.
By many people.
Exactly. It's a game changer for literally every format, I think. I've even been considering it for like my Bug Reanimator deck in Legacy, in the sideboard, because this hits Leyline of the Void, it hits Containment Priest, it hits Caracas, you know, it hits literally everything.
It hits four mana stuff.
The only stuff that it doesn't hit is the stuff that I need my permission to stop, like Surgical Extraction or my Hand Disruption. Which is like, at the end of the day, is like always the strongest, like most annoying thing for me to deal with as a Reanimator player, because it's like a huge blowout every time. And
which is kind of ironic because you want your things to go to graveyard, but not those things.
I'm not sure I understand.
The whole discard things. Or were you just talking about Surgical?
Oh yeah. It's more like Surgical when people use it on my Grizzlebrand when I try to reanimate my Grizzlebrand, and then like, oh, not only did you stop my reanimation spell, get rid of the target for the future reanimation spells, but you also just removed all of my Grizzlebrands. Like, Surgical Extraction is an insanely powerful card. It's a necessary card, because otherwise I think Reanimator and Graveyard strategies would be like really quite degenerate. They already are, but even more so. But it, you know, as somebody on the opposite end of it, like, I freaking
hate it. It's needed, yeah. What's next on the docket we're going to talk about? Because I don't want to talk about Aurelia, because, no.
No, there's nothing to say about Aurelia.
Aurelia makes me sad. How far she's fallen.
I mean, she's pretty strong and limited, but yeah. Oh,
many things are.
Oh, wow. Exactly. A myth rare that's limited? Okay.
Hey, things being mythic rare does not immediately make them strong and limited. Sometimes they're still Tree of Redemption.
What's next in multicolor?
I think Knight of Autumn deserves a mention.
Oh, Knight of Autumn. You think? Yeah.
What does it do?
So for one, a green and a white, it's a creature, 2/1 creature, Dryad Knight. When it enters the battlefield, choose one. Put 2+1/+1 counters on Knight of Autumn. So 3 mana, 4/3. No big deal. Destroy target artifact or enchantment. So Reclamation Sage. No big deal. Or, well, and this part doesn't really matter that much, but you gain 4 life.
Basically, it does all the things.
Yeah. It's either a 3 mana, 4/3 if there's no relevant artifact or enchantment to destroy, or it's just a Reclamation Sage that can sometimes be a 4/3. You know, the one downside is that it's not an elf, and it's harder to cast.
But still, it's really good.
It's quite good, yeah. And if you were playing Reclamation Sage and you're not playing Priest of Titania, and you can stomach like the slightly harder to cast cost, and like you're in the market for a 4/3 for 3 mana, like this card is pretty strong. For Modern, this is like a really big deal, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. And it's like, I'm considering green-white Death and Taxes just because...
Yeah. 4-3 for 3 mana is, like, already so aggressive. And then the fact that, like, it can just double as, like, your utility slot is kind of nutty.
It is.
And you can just gain 4 life. So if you're playing against Burn, like, good game.
Burn, what Burn?
In Modern.
Yeah, I know, but that's the point. What are they going to do after that? And then you play a second one.
Yeah, it's kind of like a 2-for-1, right? Because like you have a 2-1 that can block the creature that they want to attack with, or it has to eat a burn spell, and you just negated one of their burn spells.
Yeah, mm-hmm. At least one.
And it's cost you nothing in terms of deck building, because like you were happy to just run this anyway.
And you're running it like...
In theory, yes. I think maybe... I'm not sure if you're going to run main board or sideboard. It depends. Like, I don't know those decks well enough to say for sure, but I do feel like it's going to see play in the 75.
Like,
so it's not. That's an interesting card. We should probably talk about it because I think I did say we would.
Yep.
At the beginning of the fucking episode.
So Chance for Glory is 1 red and a white for an instant that says creatures you control gain indestructible. Take an extra turn after this one. At the beginning of that turn's end step, you lose the game.
Well, I just lost the game.
Oh.
What Nixon forgot when we were talking about this is creatures you control gain indestructible, period. Not until the end of turn.
Right.
Yeah, we were discussing that. Is that like a translation error or something? And we wanted to wait until the official card, and it turns out it just gives them indestructible.
Yeah. I mean, that is my argument. They're not going to have indestructible for long. Unless you do shenanigans.
The memory issues are not a big problem because, like, well, you know, you're going to die in the next turn anyway.
Problem
good
is
job,
if you don't.
Good job, Wizards. Like, no, thinking ahead.
Problem is if you don't, if you survive the next turn.
And how would you do that?
I mean, Gideon is one thing. The clock, what's it called?
Sundial of the Infinite.
Things like that.
Yes. It turns out we Commander players are smart boys and girls. And we figured out how to break cards like this before.
Now you can play that, what's it called? That land, Magossi.
You just
play Chance for Glory and use Magossi to skip that turn.
So 3 mana make your team indestructible, period.
And you'd add that 1 blue mana. And the fact that you have to tap Magossi, so that's 5 mana to, you know, 5 mana give your team indestructible.
Honestly, I would pay 3 mana to make my one guy ride Devil Horse and have horsemanship indefinitely. Mm. I might even play 5 mana to make everybody indestructible.
So actually, this card, like, it's potentially intriguing for certain commander decks, certain competitive commander decks, I should say. I was looking at this card because people have been sort of speculating that for a more like all in, like really like trying to be as fast and like aggressive Najeela deck, you know, you might want to play the extra turn effects because Najeela is like a little bit slower than the fastest combo decks in the format. She averages like a win on turn 4 undisrupted, but if you can take extra turns, obviously like you sort of bring that down. And this one also has the added upside of it makes your creatures indestructible, so you can just attack with them, right? And that's sort of a sticking point for Najeela, which is like sometimes it can be really hard to connect, and that can make your win attempts a little awkward. And the other upside of this card is that it's not double red, and double red is shockingly like kind of awkward to get in Najeela, because like sure you need the 1 red for Najeela herself, but beyond that you don't really want any red mana. Like you want blue mana. Always. So the fact that it's red and white means that it might actually be a bit easier to cast than a double red spell like Final Fortune, despite costing 1 extra mana. Now, I'm not about that life, like the suicide extra turn life, because it's a little too all in for me, and I'd rather, like I said, just play good cards and just try to win by playing good cards. But, you know, somebody I think could reasonably build that deck, and it could be decent, and I think it would want to potentially play this card. It has enough upside.
What's next on the multicolor?
So there's one that I find... there's a couple that I really want to talk about, come to think of it. But there's one that I feel like, you know, we would be doing ourselves a disservice if we didn't talk about it. It's the new Lazav.
Mm-hmm.
Those of the Multifarious. So for a blue and a black, it's a 1/3. When it enters the battlefield, you surveil one, and then you can pay X to have Lazav become a copy of target creature card in your graveyard with converted mana cost X, except he keeps his same name and he keeps the ability. And he's still legendary.
Not as good as the previous Lazav in some regards, because the hexproof was really big.
Yeah. Yeah, the original Lazav was like kind of a monster.
But this one is much more easier to cast and less reliant on your opponents.
Yeah, and I mean, like, this one's fun because you can just play your Phyrexian Dreadnought, let it go to the graveyard, and then have a 12-12 Lazav that kills people in two turns, right?
Or if you have million mana, you can make him into Invisible Stalker and then make him into Phage.
Nice. Yeah, so there's shenanigans to be had with this commander.
We were talking about that last episode. You can do a bunch of silly things. Is it better than playing the original Lazav? I'm not sure. But is it a total different gameplay than previous Lazav? Definitely.
Yeah, so I think he's a cool card, but I don't like, he's not super relevant for competitive, obviously. Definitely. And
even for more casual, I'm not sure if he's going to be super relevant.
Well, he's going to be relevant because I think people are going to want to play with him because he does a neat thing. And at the end of the day, I think like cards that do cool things have a lot of casual appeal, and that's great. Like, by all means, bring on the cool cards.
You mean something like Eratra the Silencer?
Yeah.
That's a cool card. It's not that good, but goddamn is it cool. Like we talked on the last episode, two blue and a black. 3/5. It's Legendary Vampire Assassin, and she cannot be blocked. Whenever she deals combat damage to a player, you exile target creature that player controls and put a hit counter on that card. First of all, it's a hit counter. How cool is it? And then that player loses the game if they own three or more exile cards with hit counters on them, and she shuffles into her own library.
There's a lot to unpack there.
Yep. First of all, double strike doesn't work. That's a problematic part.
What doesn't work?
Double strike.
Oh, double strike doesn't work. Yes.
But what does work?
So you can... Oh, yeah, Nick, should you go ahead.
Flickering it works. So you have your Deadeye Navigator, that works.
Flicker in response to the trigger, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can put it in the command zone. That's always an option for commander.
Yep.
But then you can also use things like Strionic Resonator just to double the trigger.
Yep.
And so on.
What we said last time, you can actually put her on the Mimic Vat.
Gross.
Or you can also have a Voltaic Key too if they have three with Strionic Resonator.
Oh.
Well, it's instantly eliminate one opponent.
Yep.
That's good. That's
sort of the downside. But yeah.
I mean, if you're playing more casually, killing one guy immediately is not bad.
It sends a message, you know.
Messages kill me now, please.
It sends a message, and at the end of the day, that's all that matters when you're playing Commander.
Well, it has three power, so it draws a card with Sig.
Yeah, definitely.
And there's actually ways to, you know, avoid this trigger, because you can just ninjutsu her.
Oh,
I mean,
but then you don't get the combat damage triggered.
You do. You ninjutsu her in response to the trigger because she's still attacking.
She hits. She deals damage. The trigger's on attack, and then you ninjutsu.
Oh again. Yeah, right. So you can actually use ninjutsu after combat damage. You just use it at the end of combat.
Mm-hmm. Trust me, I learned that the hard way. I learned that the hard way with Nixon.
But that's that's a lot of mana. Probably don't have because you're playing a deck on the lower converted mana cost. So it's a fun thing you can do, but I don't recommend.
She's a really cool card. I don't know how good she's gonna be in the long run, but damn if she isn't cool.
I'm definitely get myself a couple of copies.
At least one foil.
Oh, hopefully.
Because that moon in the background.
Oh, yeah. So there's another card that I'm really excited about.
Yeah?
Mnemonic Betrayal.
Oh.
So for a colorless, a blue, and a black, it's a sorcery. Exile all cards from all opponents' graveyards. You may cast those cards this turn, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any type to cast those spells. At the beginning of the next end step, if any of those cards remain exiles, you put them back into their owner's graveyard. And then you exile Mnemonic Betrayal. So It's basically reverse Yawgmoth's will, which is like pretty funny. Harder to abuse than Yawgmoth's will, just because, I mean, you have to destroy all your opponent's stuff or mill them, you know, do stuff like that. Whereas Yawgmoth's will just only depends on like your own cards, which is, you know, obviously like pretty strong on it. I mean, it means you're going to be playing a bunch of rituals and things like that, so you're probably fine in that regard. But this card, at least for competitive, people have been like already brewing with it, just because like the potential power level is so high. Like with Yawgmoth's will, which we often call Yawg win, because you kind of just win after using it. This is so similar to that. So people are experimenting now with like heavy attrition control decks, where you basically just play things like Engineered Explosives and Pernicious Deed to just blow up the board repeatedly. And then at some point in the late game, you played Mnemonic Betrayal, and you just like use it as an insane value engine to break parity on all of your removal and mass destruction. So those decks look like a lot of fun. I don't know that they're like super, super competitive, because, well, it's hard to play control in Commander in general. And then in competitive Commander, it's even harder. But I just like the idea of that type of deck. It's like, it's my type of magic.
It does sound fun.
So anything, I mean,
Yeah,
nothing else to add about that card, other than I think like probably it's also relevant for more casual play, where games are going to go slower and like there's just going to be sort of a more general attrition that occurs because people playing board wipes and removal and the fact that people aren't winning super, super quickly. So it can be quite strong in that context too. It gives you access to a lot of cards, potentially.
Potentially.
Beyond that, there was the new Niv-Mizzet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if... I mean, like the old Niv-Mizzet, this basically just auto-wins with a Curiosity. But also, it has a nice little additional ability, which is whenever a player casts an instant or sorcery spell, draw a card. It's a win condition, as well as like a huge value engine all wrapped in one. I could see like a Reanimator deck wanting to play this in the 98/99. And as a commander himself, well, I think the triple blue, triple red is probably going to make him a little too hard to cast, particularly for competitive. But in more casual circles, what do you guys think?
In casual, definitely.
The triple blue, triple red is Devotion.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he alone enables God of Thunder.
Oh, yeah. Kairnos.
And rock and roll. Somebody had to make the joke.
I mean, at minimum, he's going to be a 2-for-1 against an opponent, right? Because he can't be countered.
Yep.
And then, let's say you just immediately pass the turn without casting anything yourself. The second somebody tries to cast something to remove him, you'll draw a card. So, okay.
And then you cast the counter spell and even more things happen.
Yeah, assuming, you know, the 6 mana you spent to cast him and all of your colored mana doesn't just tie your hands. But you do potentially get to kill, like, a mana dork or something in addition to drawing your card.
Yep.
So you could maybe get a little bit of extra value there. You know, the really exciting thing is when you just, like, play him after getting infinite mana off of your Isochron Scepter, and then you just basically cast infinite Isochron Scepters, draw your deck, and then just kill everything.
That sounds okay, I guess.
It's okay, but... Again, it begs the question of, like, why aren't you just playing Thrasios? For competitive, at least.
Because you can play a dragon, I guess?
A dragon wizard.
There you go. You got a wizard at it.
And I was sort of, like, brainstorming potential, like, Reanimator-style decks with him, where, you know, you get infinite mana with something like the George combo. You guys know what George is, right?
What?
So, basically... You're playing the dragon that when it enters play, you exile all your permanents. When it leaves play, they all come back.
Dragon.
Yeah, World Gorger Dragon, which people call George. And you use Animate Dead on him. And basically what happens...
Why do you call him George?
That I honestly couldn't tell you. It's one of those historical things. But I'm sure there's a reason for it.
Well, for starters, it's a lot shorter than saying World Gorger Dragon.
I guess.
That's a reason. But... But yeah, so basically what happens is, you know, with your Animate Dead or your Necromancy or your Dance of the Dead, you bring him back, he exiles all your permanents, which includes the reanimation enchantment, includes all your lands, so then he dies, all your stuff comes back in, your lands come back in untapped, you immediately tap them for mana, your Animate Dead comes back in, brings him back, you loop that for infinite mana, then you have to terminate the loop by reanimating something different. if you can't reanimate something different, the game is immediately a draw, which kind of sucks. But then, you know, once you get infinite mana, in theory, you know, you get your Thrasios in play, draw your whole deck, and you can play Niv-Mizzet, and then you can just do exactly what I said, which is, you know, you just draw your whole deck with on a loop. Is it better than, you know, like the millions of things you can do with infinite mana anyway? Not really. But the nice thing is that he's like a fatty that you can reanimate that draws you cards and like can be extremely relevant. So that's not so bad. And in addition, like it lets you theoretically have a plan through graveyard hate where, you know, your plan becomes like, oh, I'm going to hard cast Niv-Mizzet and I'm just going to play like a curiosity on him and win that way. You know, I'm not saying it's good, but it's potentially, it potentially has some legs. And reanimator decks are obviously always interested in having a backup plan that doesn't involve the graveyard. Because, mm-hmm. you know, the second somebody plays something like a Grafdigger's Cage or a Rest in Peace, like, you feel sad.
Anything else that's kind of relevant or good?
Well, as far as cards? Oh, Niksha, sorry.
Well, we didn't get a chance to talk about Tajik.
Oh, do we have to?
Do we have to? Yeah.
Niksha, what does Tajik do?
He has a bunch of numbers and abilities that are mostly irrelevant, but he has that prevent all non-combat damage that will be dealt to other creatures. That's...
So Anger of the Gods doesn't touch you?
Yeah. Pyroclasm, you know, stuff like that. I mean, he's a human, after all.
I mean, commander-wise, mostly what's gonna get you are gonna be rats, not things like this.
Yeah, so he's not really relevant, but let's see. We'll be wrapping up shortly.
Because there's not much left. We talked about Raska and she's good. And that's basically it, isn't it?
There's a few cards that are exciting sort of in a more casual context. Like Thousand Year Storm. You know, obviously, like, people are going to want to play their red-blue sort of Chaos Storm type decks with, like, Possibility Storm and, you know, those shenanigans. And so this fits right into that deck because it's going to do silly things. Not super exciting for competitive. And then finally, I guess like the last one that's kind of like interesting is Thief of Sanity, because it's potentially like a good amount of card advantage, but it's still a 3-mana 2/2 that like doesn't necessarily do anything. So I don't know.
Let us not forget about the Tron Killer number 3 or 4 in this set on Morgigo that just removes your Tron for 3-mana.
Very modern, relevant card indeed. I'm also somewhat interested in it for potentially for blue-black reanimator, but again, 3-mana in Legacy is like a hard sell. Just to name Surgical Extraction, but I don't actually believe it. But you know, just F Surgical Extraction. Excuse me. The last card that I guess is like the closest to being relevant is Underrealm Lich. This card was 3-mana instead of 5, and like had a slightly less aggressive body. Could be really impressive, because looking at 3 cards every time you would draw a card and like being able to fill your graveyard, relevant for a lot of decks. Also, just randomly has like regenerate kind of.
It does have a regenerate.
It's so interesting that it's basically regenerate, but like without using the regenerate keyword. But at 5-mana, this card is, I don't think it's going to be efficient enough to see play lot of decks. It's cute. But that about covers it for cards I wanted to talk about.
That is about it. And we talked about the rest of the more casual ones in the previous podcasts. Weed Dragonauts is coming back, and that's great. Just random thing.
Mm-hmm. Shaka coming back.
that was expected. That would be right if they weren't back. But yeah, we're going to wrap things up. I'll take that as a yes.
Sounds good.
Jesse, where can the people find you if they so wish to do so?
So if you're looking for competitive Commander content, and right now, as we discussed earlier, we're on a bit of a hiatus, but the channel's not dead. It's just, you know, life often gets in the way. You can find us on YouTube. We're called Team Turn 3, and we play, it's all gameplay, and it's all competitive. So that's your jam. You know where to find us.
And if ever you actually want to talk a bit more about Commander, you know where we are. We can make arrangements.
Yeah, absolutely. I love talking with you guys.
Oh, same here. But that's it, Nick, right?
That's it.
This has been episode 80 of the Elder Dragon Doodle podcast.
Oh, woohoo.
This has been your host, Igor.
And this was Nick.
And this has been Jesse.
Yeah, and as always, the Emperor protects.
Indeed.
The Emperor.